Welcome to Lockdown Trivia, the Unlock Your Brain podcast quiz show. My name is Dalton McGee, and I'll be your host as we choose four expert categories of our players and explore them together as we try to unlock this trivia game one key at a time. This week's episode features Scott Brill from Westport, Connecticut. Scott's expert categories are Lincoln's Assassination, Open Era Wimbledon, Sondheim Musicals, and Hitchcock Films. Sign up for your own episode of Lockdown Trivia following the link in the description of each and every episode. You can play by yourself or bring a friend for a competitive or cooperative game. Now let's get started. Scott, are you ready to play Lockdown Trivia?
I am very ready to play Lockdown Trivia, Dalton.
I'm excited for you to be here. Scott Dog Brillionaire, as you're known in the trivia community. It is episode 3 of season 2 now. We've learned a lot from last season, and our guest list is only getting better and better, and you're a testament to that. So welcome, Scott.
Well, thank you so much, Dalton. I've been looking forward to this, and I love this podcast. It's really great, and you're a great host.
I appreciate it. Scott,
so does that give me an extra point for saying you're a great host? No.
It may give you a deciding iffy whether it's right or not point later. We'll see how the night goes.
Okay, I'll take it.
All right, Scott, where would you like to begin your game today?
Gosh darn it. Let's go all over the place. You know what? Since this past weekend, my husband and I saw a Sondheim tribute show, why don't we start with Sondheim Musicals, the unlocked question?
All right. This is just a straight-up category all about Sondheim's musicals. Nothing goofy here. Here is your unlocked question. Meryl Streep starred in the 2014 movie adaptation of what Sondheim show that likely would have won more Tonys had it not came out the same year as Phantom of the Opera?
That is Into the Woods.
It is. I thought about including more of the star-studded cast of the movie, but I think all we need is Meryl Streep to know where we're going with that.
Yep.
All right, Scott, you got one key starting off a game well. You going to keep going or jump somewhere else?
No, you know, I'll stick with Stephen Sondheim.
All right, here is your one key Sondheim question. Send in the Clowns is a song written by Stephen Sondheim for what 1973 musical that is an adaptation of an Ingmar Bergman's 1955 film Smiles of a Summer Night?
That is A Little Night Music.
It is A Little Night Music. Scott, you have two keys, and Sondheim, where to next?
The Immortal Steve. Let's stay with Sondheim musicals.
All right, here is your two-key question. Surprisingly, none of Sondheim's shows on Broadway hit the 1,000 shows mark. But which show almost did, running 964 performances from 1962 to 1964?
So it's the early ones. A Sondheim show... when was Gypsy, which he wrote the words to, but I guess it's his show. I'm gonna say, though, I think Gypsy is earlier. His first show that he created was A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. I'm gonna go with A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
It was 36 shows shy, and it is the correct answer.
Woo!
Yes, I think Sondheim, for all his success and brilliance, didn't exactly write crowd pleasers.
Not always. Although Into the Woods, believe me, it's the debate among all musical theater people where they stand with Sondheim. But
yep.
I think he's a master.
Three keys, and so far you're a master of his trivia.
Gosh, I'm kind of anal retentive. We got to keep the category. Three keys for Sondheim, please.
We'll see how we do as we roll through. Your three key question for Sondheim is this. Sunday in the Park with George is inspired by a painting about a Sunday afternoon on what river island that literally translates to the large bowl?
It's my favorite painting, and this is my favorite Sondheim musical. I'm going to slaughter the French, but it's La Grande Jatte, J-A-T-T-E.
Yeah, you didn't actually do as bad as you thought, because you said it exactly as I would have said it. La Grande Jatte is correct, and you are so far 4 for 4 on your Sondheim questions.
Well, I hate to say goodbye to Sondheim, but let's do his four-key question for Stephen Sondheim.
All right, here's the hypothetically hardest Sondheim question in the category. The Exterminating Angel and The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie are the two films inspiring what last work of Sondheim's that was off-Broadway from 2023 to 2024?
You're good. It has such a title that... It's just like words. I know every title's words. I think it was called, this sounds so funny, but I think it was just called Here We Are.
As my cats enter the room and share the sentiments of the correct answer, Here We Are.
Ah.
Yes. Well done. Here We Are is correct. 2 years after his death, it was on Broadway and didn't have a long run. But from what I've read about it, it was a captivating show. So
I did not see it, even though. I have to say, though, I was once, when we saw Assassins, the revival of it recently, Sondheim was sitting about 10 seats away from us. And I'll tell you, when he went in the room, we all just stood up and applauded. I'd never been in the room with him, and it was a thrill. And this was obviously shortly before he passed away. So what a thrill that was.
Okay, well, Scott, that's great. You have swept your Sondheim category, unsurprising to those that know you. You knew something about musical theater. Now we will leave the musical theater realm.
Oh, no. Now we're jumping.
Where will we go? With your as many keys as you have, you can go anywhere you want.
I know people on Jeopardy go backwards in the thing, but I always afraid to do that. But I probably should do that. But anyway, let's take us now to Wimbledon and let's do the unlock question. Let's kind of start easy, hopefully.
We're going to see what Wimbledon has in store. Unlocked question is this. For the first time in 15 years, Wimbledon will increase the cost of what iconic fruity treat in 2025 associated with the tournament since the 19th century?
Strawberries and cream.
That is correct. And the British are unhappy about the increase in cost.
Well, they'll get over it.
Yeah, they will get over
it. Of course, paying like $1,800 to sit and watch tennis for 2 hours, but okay.
At some point when you're carrying 100 plates, 101 will be no different.
Exactly right.
Yep. You got your question right for your unlocked question in Wimbledon. Are you now feeling more emboldened to attack a higher key question, or are you going to keep going up from there?
I'm out of control. You know what? Let's switch around. Let's go to the Hitchcock films. Let's do an unlocked question there. Let's see how that plays out.
All right. In this category, I'm going to tell Scott the year a film came out, a brief summary of the film, but something in the summary is going to be just off. He's going to have a correct answer that is including the new title based on what's off in the summary of the film. I think it'll make sense as we go through. Scott knows what's coming, so here we go.
Sure.
Your unlocked question is this. 60. A secretary on the run checks into a remote hotel run by a nervous man with a terrifying secret. He has one eye.
It's Psycho. Is it Cyclops?
It is Cyclops, yes.
Okay. Oh, that's just silly.
And now Scott knows he's going to enjoy the wordplay category.
Oh, let's go. This is silly. I'm in for silly. So what happens? So now am I have like 5 or 11 keys?
You have as many keys as you need. You can go anywhere you want. I haven't taken any keys.
Oh, but if I get them wrong, I lose all these keys, right?
And there's only one way back into your expert categories right now.
Here. Okay, so this is... Oh, I see. I'm carrying all this stuff that I could lose at any moment. Let's do Hitchcock Films, the one key question.
Your one key Hitchcock film clue is this. 1963. A small California town is suddenly and inexplicably attacked by flocks of the largest minority ethnic group in Turkey.
Oh, instead of the birds, is it the Kurds?
Yes, it is. The Kurds.
Oh, no. I hope everyone's okay.
Yes. The Kurds will continue your streak. You're perfect so far, but your strategy is dangerous so far, Scott Brill.
I hear what you're saying now, but I'm sticking with it and see what happens. The two key question for Hitchcock, though.
Hitchcock's two key clue is this. 1959. A man is mistaken for a government agent and pursued across the U.S. by spies with medieval or mythological Scandinavian backgrounds.
Well, instead of north by northwest, I think we're saying Norse by northwest, north by northwest.
Yeah, you got it. Norse by northwest is what I was going for.
Yeah.
But Norse by northwest is funnier.
It's funnier, yeah.
Yes, and you have another correct answer, Scott Brill. Where to?
Thank you. Yeah, three key Hitchcock.
If you get all of these, this dangerous strategy won't matter at all. Let's see what's next. Your three key Hitchcock clue is this. 1955. A dead body discovered in a small New England town causes confusion, comedy, and an awareness of boating shoes.
Boating shoes. So it's the trouble with Harry. What are boating shoes? Oh, no. Boy. Boating shoes. Boating shoes are called something. Oh, are they? I'm here on an island. I should know this. How about the trouble? I don't think this is a word. The trouble with Sperry's? The trouble with Sperry?
The trouble with Sperry is correct. Yes.
I almost lost everything there because I couldn't think of the word Sperry. How ridiculous is that?
You have many correct answers.
I do. I'm really nervous. Let's finish out Hitchcock films and the four key question and watch me lose it all. And
let's see what we have on our hypothetically hardest Hitchcock film. Clue. 1943. A teenage girl suspects her beloved uncle may be a serial killer who seeks power in politics, business, or social media influencing.
Shadow of a Doubt and Shadow of a Clout? That's all I got. I think I'm going to throw all my points down the drain.
You will not, Scott. Shadow of a Clout is correct.
Oh.
They're chasing clout.
They are.
And
you're a funny punster and rhymester, I tell you.
Hey, I had a good time writing that category. That's all I'm saying.
Fantastic.
All right, we got Sondheim and Hitchcock are 10 for 10, plus the open era Wimbledon. You have enough keys to anything you want. Now, I wonder, will you try to climb a category again or will you change your strategy? We're about to find out.
Yeah, and, you know, for Chris Brewer, who I think many people know, we jokingly said that he approved of the Lincoln assassination on an earlier podcast. So why don't we go to the Lincoln assassination for an unlocked question and see what I do there?
No more unlocked questions after this one. Here is your unlocked Lincoln assassination question. Lincoln's assassination was part of a larger plot that included assassinating two other government figures. Mm-hmm. Name either of them.
Yep. And he was stabbed by Lewis Payne, William H. Seward. But there was lost his nerve, but Andrew Johnson, the vice president, was also on the list. But Seward was actually stabbed. So yeah. William H. Seward.
Those are both the correct answers, so either one would have worked. Where to next?
Let's go, since it started, I know this is going to air a long time ago, but it's Wimbledon is happening. So let's go back to Wimbledon in a one key question, and I'll see what happens there.
Your one key Wimbledon question is this. The first American to win at Wimbledon during the open era is what player in 1972 who shares his name with the protagonist of a Seth MacFarlane show?
Oh, yes. It's Griffiths.
Scott agrees.
Scott agrees with the question. Is it, no, it's not Griffiths. That's the other show. The first he's Australian. Is it Stan Smith?
The father of American Dad and the first American to win an open era Wimbledon. Stan Smith is correct. Yes. I think that's probably a harder question without the American Dad backdoor, honestly.
Yeah. I knew it because of Wimbledon.
That's funny. Well, it's your expert category, Scott.
American Dad led me on a different weird track.
He was worried that somehow Peter Griffin had won Wimbledon.
I was like, yeah, that's not even right. I was like, that's not a tennis name, something. I was like, that doesn't sound odd. I picked it too. Wimbledon, two key question.
All right. Next up in Wimbledon. What Australian women's player was the first champion after returning from the COVID break and the only Australian woman to win other than Margaret Court and Yvonne Goolagong?
She's outstanding. Her name is Ashley Barty, B-A-R-T-Y.
That is correct. We are still perfect, Scott. Where to now?
I'm scared. Okay, Wimbledon, the open era of Wimbledon, by the way, started in 1968. Three key questions.
Your three key open era Wimbledon question is this. Only two men's players have won Wimbledon during both the amateur era and the open era, both having two open era wins. Name them.
Name them both?
Correct.
You're mean. You're a very mean person.
This is a three key question, Scott Brill.
It is. One of them is Rocket Rod Laver. I'm pretty positive of that. One in both. Rod Laver, I know, did it. I think it's an Australian named John Newcomb is the other one, who was one of McEnroe's favorite players. I'm going to say Rod Laver and John Newcomb.
And I'm going to say you're still perfect in your lockdown trivia game, Scott. That is correct. To get an amateur era question in there since you specified open era. I wanted to dig a little bit on you there.
All those years of watching tennis is paying off. But I am ready to risk it all in a 4K question on Wimbledon. I know I'm going to fall on the floor.
Here we go. Hypothetically hardest Wimbledon open air question is this. Pete Sampras would have won 8 consecutive Wimbledon titles had it not been for a 1996 quarterfinals loss to what Dutch player who went on to win the tournament?
Yep, it's heard around the world. He was a great player, but I think he only won once. The wonderful Richard Krajicek, who, believe it or not, I've met in my life, and a slumdog millionaire, because there used to be a tennis tournament in New Haven, and he would play it. Richard Krajicek.
A name that tennis fans would not know unless they saw it or apparently met him.
I have his autograph, and I'm sure I show people, and they're like, who the...
Yeah. Well, you're correct, Scott, and you are so far perfect. As ahead of us for our expert categories, all that's left is Lincoln's assassination. Oh, would you like to go there next or to your bonus questions next?
No, let's go to Lincoln, because if I screw up, I'm going to need bonus questions, I'm thinking, but I won't need them all. Okay, well, yeah, one key for Lincoln's assassination. It was not a good thing.
Scott, next up is your one key Lincoln's assassination question. Here it is.
Yeah.
Located across the street from Ford's Theater is what house that Lincoln was taken to and died in after being shot?
Yep, it is the Peterson House.
The Peterson House is correct. What's your next?
Let's have Lincoln hit me again with a two-key question for the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Your two-key Lincoln question is this. Upon Lincoln's death, Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton said, "Now he belongs to the ages." Though some accounts, perhaps more fittingly, claim he said, "Now he belongs to the what?"
I believe, and I always like "Now he belongs to the ages," but I think it's "Now he belongs to the angels."
That is correct. Mm-hmm. There is some disagreement on what he said, but I think anyone who admires Abraham Lincoln appreciates either sentiment.
Correct. Yes, I think so. And also, whether he actually said anything at all, because in those moments things really get out of hand. There's a famous there are many famous like wood graphs of, you know, pictures, because there's no camera, of him dying. At one point there's like 37 people in this tiny room, you know, other, you know, because they want to make it so everybody was there. It's like, no, there was like 7 people were there,
right?
Okay, let's hit it. 3 key for Lincoln's assassination.
Your 3-key Lincoln's assassination question is this. After leaping onto the stage and breaking his leg, John Wilkes Booth yelled what state motto of Virginia that translates to, and thus to, tyrants in English?
Sic, semper tyrannis.
That is correct. I think I know where you're going to go next, but you know what? For sake of asking.
Let's take a nap. Oh, no, no. I think we have to continue, because a nap would be boring on the podcast audience. But it would be fun. It'd be nice. 4-key question on Lincoln's assassination. Let's finish out, see what happens.
Let's see if we're going to go perfect on our expert categories. You're hypothetically hardest. Well, I'm going to pause real quick, because I always say this. Officially, you're going to get to every question in your episode, Scott. So congratulations. Yeah. That doesn't happen for everybody. The question is, are we going to finish with our first perfect score or not? No pressure. Here's your hypothetically hardest Lincoln's assassination question. 4 conspirators were hanged on July 7th, 1865, including what woman that was controversially the first woman ever executed by the federal government?
It's funny that you would end this category with perhaps my favorite trivia question about the Lincoln assassination. Her name was Mary Surratt, S-U-R-R-A-T-T, I think. Mary Surratt.
I'm a little upset. Not that I'm not rooting for you, Scott, but 2 of my 4 key questions were, "I've met him," and it's my favorite trivia fact. So, Scott, I don't think it's ever happened. I don't think anyone has ever got 20 for 20 on their expert category. So, well done.
Thank you. That's exciting.
Now, we finally break the record?
Okay, here we're going for the record.
Bonus keys are ahead of you. You can't lose keys. It doesn't matter. You're going to get to all of them.
Yep.
But which will you get to first?
You know, well, I'm scared of it. Let's try before and after, because I might lose it all in this dumb thing.
Your before and after clue for your episode is this, Scott. The U.S. president who started the Peace Corps, plus the annual awards given to those in the performing arts, most recently the Grateful Dead, Bonnie Raitt, and others.
It would be the John Fitzgerald Kennedy Center Honors.
He threw in the Fitzgerald, which is wild and also accurate. Before and after clue correct. And I'm curious, Scott, are you picking the bonus questions you feel best about first or the ones you're scared of first?
I'm not a big before and after fan. I know Chris asked me to write one on a theater theme for him, and I didn't. And even after I wrote it, I wasn't particularly happy with it because on Jeopardy, they're often clever and there's a way to get in. Anyway.
It's interesting you say that, Scott, because I'm sure you're aware, but maybe you're not, that one he asked you to write was my downfall on the Broadway Before and After.
It's right. It was for you. That's right. I didn't know that until after I heard it. I was like, wait, I just met this person. That's who I'm writing for.
Yeah, because I said Sound of Music can't be the first song in the show.
That's right. That was so funny. As soon as you said that, I said, oh, no, he's in deep water now.
Yeah. So now I know that. We'll make that one mistake again.
It's famously the first song of the show.
Bro, I hate Sound of Music. It's about 45 minutes too long.
I love the Sound of Music. Okay.
All right. What's your next in your bonus case?
We won't even get about that. Okay. Help me. I forget what National Blank Day is. Let's go there and because I'm nervous about it.
Today is National TV Dinner Day, Scott. What? Here's your question.
Sure.
Sharing his name with a high-up perspective you'd see from a plane, what Brooklyn-born entrepreneur invented a machine in 1925 for freezing packaged fish, leading to the development of TV dinners?
That would be Birdseye.
I will accept just Birdseye. Clarence Birdseye, for those keeping track at home. Sure. And I can't believe that's his real name, but it is.
It is, yeah.
And
those who grew up eating TV dinners, that was absolutely what it was.
You had the folded wooden tray, right? You said it right in
front
of you?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and well, actually, ours were metal, and they had birds on. My mother loved birds, so we would sit in the living room and eat on TV.
Yep.
Like, I grew up in an era that did that, and yep. Was
I did too. Them. Our age difference aside, I did too. Ours were just made out of wood.
Okay.
All right, Scott. Three questions left. Bonus keys, all of them. Where to next?
Gosh, I have no idea. I've forgotten what Billboard Buster is. So let's go there because I'm nervous about it too.
Scott's requested favorite music genre a challenge to me, and it was Broadway. So here is his Billboard Buster. Two songs from Broadway shows have topped the Billboard Top 100, and one heavily inspired by a Broadway tune has as well. They were by Louis Armstrong, The Fifth Dimension, and Ariana Grande, respectively. Mm-hmm. Name the shows.
Name the shows. Well, name all three shows.
Correct.
Louis Armstrong's was Hello, Dolly. So that's the name of the show. He also sang the title song from it. I believe The Fifth Dimension sang This Is the Dawning of the Age of Aquarius from Hair. And you say it again, the Ariana Grande, the song was inspired by a Broadway show?
Heavily inspired by a Broadway tune. And it has topped the Billboard Top 100.
Wow. I think you're gonna knock me out here. I need to name the show. I don't know. I only know that she sang in Wicked, so I'm gonna blow everything on this. I can't believe that you're stumping me. I love Ariana Grande too, but I don't really know her songs. A song inspired. I don't know what we're talking about. I don't know what song it is if it's not from Wicked. I don't know what it is. What's her other songs? Ariana Grande. Songs. She sings songs. Oh boy. Inspired by. I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know her songs well enough to know the answer to that. I don't know.
Scott, I have good news and bad news.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is you're still on track to set the all-time lockdown trivia record.
Yeah, fuck.
The bad news is it will not be a perfect score today.
Right.
You are absolutely correct about Hello Dolly and Hair. The song, her lyrics say breakfast at Tiffany's and bottles of bubbles, girls with tattoos who like getting in trouble, lashes and diamonds, ATM machines. These are a few of my favorite things.
Oh, for God's sakes.
The great irony of ironies.
Ironies. Oh, my God.
Is that I got honestly, you back. And I didn't even mean to.
You absolutely did. I would have never gotten that because, yeah, I've heard that lyric, but that's a deep lyric to me. I would not know that. Boy, you knocked it out.
Seven Rings, inspired by The Sound of Music.
And now that you say it, I have heard it on the radio, and I should have known that, but okay.
Scott, I promise you.
I have a pit in my stomach.
I promise you I was rooting for you there.
I got hair and Hello Dolly, man. I'm telling you.
I think this will go down as one of those all-time funny trivia podcast moments is that we are both so confident on this particular area and we got each other on accident on Sound of Music, not even meaning to.
Dalton, I'm never going to live that down. That's horrible. Well, do whatever you want. Do Stormy Trivia. Do Stormy Trivia.
Stormy Trivia is next up. Something I think you should know, Scott. Here is your question.
For one key.
Well, you didn't lose any keys. They're bonus
keys.
I know. I know what it feels like to look at the red bubble. I've looked at it myself.
I hate that red bubble. Okay, go ahead.
The L in L. Frank Baum stands for what name, also the surname of the deputy chief of staff in West Wing?
Yep, Lyman. His name was Lyman Frank Baum, L-Y-M-A-N.
That is correct. Lyman Frank Baum and Josh Lyman, one of my favorite characters in the West Wing. One question left. It is actually a clue in this case, Scott. It is our Who in the World clue. And here I will tell you the real name of a person.
Oh, okay.
And basically a bunch of context. And you tell me what their famous stage name is.
Sure.
Here we go. Eric Marlin Bishop, an actor and musician, 1967 to present. He is the only black actor to ever be nominated for two Academy Awards in the same year.
Yeah. It's Jamie Foxx.
It is Jamie Foxx. And Scott.
The Sound of Music. I can't believe that's the only thing I got wrong.
I'm extremely proud to tell you, despite that you are the new all-time record holder of Lockdown Trivia's score. Well done.
Cool. And you're going to give me this up. You're going to say I got it.
I'm going to say I'm very proud of you. And
I'm very happy to have done this. This is a great game. This really is a lot of fun. But I'll tell you, I was nervous the whole way because when the keys are at stake, you're like, well, he could ask me anything and I'm going to be like, I have no idea.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting the game theory of it's already stressful when you're on a podcast. Like, you know, you're supposed to know this expert category, but then you add the keys are looming and it, you know, the cortisol levels in your brain going up definitely impacts trivia. But Scott, you got 24 out of 25 and everybody else can kiss it because you're on top right now for the Lockdown Trivia all-time record.
Well, thank you. That's awesome sauce, but that's gonna haunt me, Dalton. And but I also think it's poetic justice that I couldn't think of the Sound of Music. That
I'm not gonna lie, there is a part of me that enjoys that immensely, but the schadenfreude is on display for both of us there. That's we cool. both got each other on accident with that effing musical. Scott, do you have anything coming up? Any shout outs you want to make? You're definitely well known in this trivia community, but what's going on?
Well, as people do know, I'm a library director, and it's so important to support your local libraries. I say it on every podcast. You have one wherever you are. There's a library that gives information for free to everyone, and so that's really important to know. And it's books, but it's also eContact. They have databases. My library offers like Ancestry.com, and you can all that kind of stuff. So, and also streaming services like Hoopla and Canopy, where you can watch TV shows and all that. So it's really extraordinary what libraries can do. They are a bastion of democracy, and that's how they were really created. And they're more important now than probably ever.
Yep, I second that. I just recently drove by the Nashville Public Library downtown. It is beautiful.
It's a beautiful building, isn't it? Yes.
I appreciate you being on here. I was looking forward to this episode immensely. You did not disappoint. Scott Dog Brillionaire showed up and broke the all-time Lockdown Trivia record. The perfect score remains a goal for those.
You
got to
have me on again, and I'll go for that perfect score.
He says he's going to get it next time.
That brass ring, man. I got to get it.
Fair enough. Scott, thanks for being here. And we'll see you next time you're on to chase that 25.
Thanks, Dalton. Have a great night.
Yeah. I know. We all just spent 25 minutes. Pretty sure Scott was going to do it. And he got 2/3 of the way on the deciding question. Call that 24 in 2/3 innings before Scott finally gave up a hit. That was an amazing game by Scott. But those were some hard questions throughout the game. And I'm not going to lie, the poetry of Missing Sound of Music, when he got me on my Skillet Brew win, Missing Sound of Music, I obviously wanted him to do it. I was rooting for him the whole time, but man, that was funny in the moment. And so Scott, fired up, ready to come back for a future endeavor on Lockdown Trivia. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed recording it. Scott is full of joy and full of knowledge. And there was a lot of tape on the floor of that one. I had to cut 5-minute long segments repeatedly throughout the episode where Scott and I just got to talking about one topic or another, and he had all these extra great trivia tidbits, and so that was a lot of fun. So Scott, congratulations on breaking the all-time Lockdown Trivia record, 24 out of 25 points, nothing to turn your nose at, and I can't wait to see if that holds up as we go on into our future episodes. Something I do want to mention from this episode that I think is a big learning moment going forward, aside from the fact I do think it was a really good game, I think the questions were great, I think he had a lot of fun, he giggled, he was challenged, it was just a really enjoyable experience, but that before and after, you can't use an eponymous transition in a before and after. The John F. Kennedy Center Honors, they are the Kennedy Center Honors, and I don't know why I thought that was a good idea writing that in the moment, but when you're doing a before and after, don't let the connection be the exact same thing. John F. Kennedy, they're named after him. Don't do that. It was confusing to Scott, and he was like, is that really all you're looking for? And I was like, yeah, that wasn't a great question. So before and afters, don't use eponymous connections. That's it. In lieu of a bonus question, I do want to point out a couple extra details of the description of each episode. First of all, the rules are there now instead of being read aloud at the beginning of each episode. It helps us get right into the game and right into the fun. A couple other things, there is a link to sign up in the description, as I always say. There's also a link to purchase Lockdown Trivia merch if you would like. That does not benefit me, it's just really good merch, and it's well designed by the folks over at Guardian Proline. What does benefit me are those Venmo and Cash App links in the description. If you feel like supporting my crippling caffeine addiction or just putting a beer in my hand for writing or playing trivia, I would be very grateful for that. And honestly, it just feels good to be supported. But I don't do this for the money. I do this because I really believe in contributing to the bettering of writing trivia, and I have a blast meeting you guys and playing this game. New episodes every Wednesday morning, so check back each week for some more fun. In the meantime, I cannot wait to continue to write, continue to learn, continue to unlock your brains one key at a time.
Bernadette Peters is in the Broadway review called Old Friends, and she sings Send in the Clowns. And let me just tell you, when the oboe begins, there's this, if anybody knows the song, the way it's originally, Joan Collins' version is much known, but the way it's actually done is very soft and very sweet. The entire audience of like 1,500 people shut up completely. It was like you could hear a pin drop as she sang every note. We were all like in a collective held breath. That's how powerful that song can be in the theater.
Yeah, it is. I think it's one of those songs that is so transcendent through pop culture that it can be both effective as a joke and as a very serious life-changing moment. And I love that about it.
We've all had someone who left us, but we didn't know how to stay and be present, and all. It's a brilliant piece.
And also Krusty the Clown is singing on The Simpsons.
And also Krusty the Clown is brilliant. Yeah.